A quick hello, and we're good to go. Welcome to the show, Josh Mooskin.
Love.
Wonderful. I like it when people laugh because it means I've sung in tune. Oh, no, maybe it means I've sung out of tune and I've got the name wrong or both.
I'm never going to tell.
Right, okay. Oh, because you can't tell or because you're too polite?
Both.
All right, which is delightful. Before we get started with your survival guide to the ad targeting apocalypse, which I'm super interested to hear about, we're going to look at your brand SERP, which is the theme of this show at the beginning always. And here we can see that, oh, I've got it the wrong way around. Excuse me. This is your brand SERP. And there's a Josh Mooskin who is well known for, I can't remember what it's called now, the training plan for Iron Man. And you get very little space. We can see here the green that you get, relatively little space, which is a real pity because you're famous in your niche, but this guy dominates. And theoretically, if you created more content around your name and created a bigger personal brand, you could dominate. I don't know if you want to, but this is what we do. And the Calicube newsletter is all about how to dominate and push your brand across Google and get this kind of thing, which Josh Mooskin, the other one, the Iron Man Josh Mooskin, has done really well despite himself. I don't think he's made this effort, is that when you search his name, Google associates these incredibly specific questions about Iron Man. Is 6 months enough to train for a half Iron Man? So they associate the person with his specialist topic. And in the SEO world and in the SG world that's coming, and we'll talk a little bit about that, that is hugely important. It's not just who you are, but it's what is your specialist topic. And if Google can grasp that, it necessarily knows who your audience is, and it can make that match of the recommendation of the solution to the person who's looking for that solution. And you would hope that you would be the solution because Google's made that understanding and association. This is what I talk about all day, every day. And if you want to get up to speed on that, sign up for the Calicube newsletter, calicube.com/newsletter, and we will teach you to educate Google. And when you educate Google, you get to the top of its recommendations, and that eventually makes you lots more money. But talking about money, we're going to be talking about spending money on ads and how to avoid spending money uselessly when AI takes over. You are listening to Branded Search and Beyond with Jason Barnard. Now, back to the show. So we're looking at the ad targeting apocalypse. Explain what that is for people who don't know.
Sure. Quick fun fact, the Iron Man Josh Mooskin is also me. So it happens to be one of the same person.
Oh, somebody didn't do his research, which just goes to show how much we just look at Google on a surface level and make assumptions. And I assumed it wouldn't be the same person. So that's you with two different facets, one of which is super duper ad expert and the other is Iron Man.
That also and is you just taught me SEO a good lesson. Practice.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you got it. The ad piece that's coming to search is very interesting. So the small history behind why we are in this position now where ad targeting is degrading as quickly as it is Google, Meta, insert other ad platform name. A couple years ago, they all lost billions of dollars in privacy lawsuits, and they mainly lost those because it was too easy to target people too directly. It was too easy to target males 35 and over who like to train for Iron Man in this zip code who had one dog and two kids, right? And people didn't like that. So they lost some lawsuits. And the counter to that is that all these companies make all of their money from running ads. So they had to figure out a way to continue making all their money from running ads and not get sued anymore. The way that they did that is they started to make targeting more obscure. So instead of being able to target very specific demographics, you now get to target ranges. Some categories like housing, employment, and credit on social ads, you can't target demographics at all. You have to simply go to interests, and even those are lesser than they were. And if you pair the smaller amount of targeting options that we have and the more broadly they are targeting what used to be very specific options, with the fact that these companies are starting to put more of their algorithms into big black boxes that we can't see and ask for their trust, you're left in a situation where Google is now launching campaign types such as Performance Max, where they say, hey, give me some ad copy, give me a landing page and a budget, and we'll do all the other stuff, which is stuff that we want to have control over. We want to control what they're searching, what pages they're on, where we want to distribute that content. And that's sort of being taken away. And so it's not too difficult to imagine a very near future where all ad platforms are, give me creative, give me a thing you want a person to do, such as fill out a form or call you or some kind of web action, and we're going to handle the whole middle piece on your behalf.
Now, right. Sorry, I mean, you were talking about control. So if we stop there for just one moment.
Yeah.
Is people want control, but can we trust people with control? Because people by definition make mistakes. People by definition cannot track all of this over time, minute by minute. And yet the black box AI, machine learning black box can. It knows the audience on the other side and therefore is much more likely to make a better match than a person.
If given the correct inputs. So this is where the survival guide piece, you know, comes in. So it is relatively risky to say, hey, I'm an insurance provider and I have an ad and I want you to go find every person on the planet that needs insurance and serve my ad to them. There are a lot of nuances in that. What kind of insurance for what? What are the budgets? Are you personal or your business? There are all sorts of things that we'd love to be able to filter that targeting down to and say it's personal auto insurance or it's corporate liability insurance, what have you. But without the middle, we can't do that. So how do we still maintain some control, but also get the maximum benefit of machine learning and all the stuff that does make decisions more accurately and quickly than people do? And that has to come to do with the information and the data that we share with these ad platforms as it pertains to the thing we want them to find. So historically,
to be really clear about that, it's not the information of the people we're trying to target, it's the information we give it.
Correct.
And our level of control becomes semi-indirect in that we need to provide the right input to get the right output. But doesn't that just force us to actually be more clear, which is good for the user at the other side, because we're being more clear about what we're offering and the landing page is going to be more effective because we're being clearer?
Yeah, there is definitely a bias towards that. And the simplest example that I've found resonates most broadly is, imagine that you're a company that only sells red shoes. You don't sell orange ones or purple ones. They're just red shoes is all that you have. But if Google said, sure, it was inspiration for the comment. But if Google says, hey, we're just going to target shoe lovers, that's risky because people might want something blue or purple or orange or green or what have you, but you only have red. So the way that you start to interact with these platforms is when someone comes to your website and they buy a pair of shoes, you will only send information to Google or to Meta or to whomever when someone buys a red pair or when they come in and they search for a red pair. So you're starting to not tell ad platforms about people that want to buy shoes, but they want them for the wrong color. You're only going to share information about the ones who want red ones. And what happens is a couple things. People get scared of filtering this data to something smaller because they see a smaller number of events happening in the platform, which by division purposes makes their cost per action higher. You're simply sending less stuff, so reporting, it's more expensive to get that thing. So that can feel weird and scary from a reporting perspective. But over time, as you were saying to me, I think prior to getting started, like, hey, when you start something, sometimes it's rocky and then it improves as it goes. Over time, because you're only giving these platforms information about people you have already deemed quality, they're only going to go out and try to find people who meet that same set of criteria. So you're going to stop getting people who want purple flip-flops, and you're only going to get people who increasingly want red shoes.
Which means that we actually have multiple points of data from ourselves, one of which is ad copy, images, whatever we provide as the assets. Number two is whatever we provide is the landing page, which Google or the other platform then looks at, figures out what it actually offers, sees if there's a match, and figures out the true match. And then the conversion, which is which of the people who went through the ad to the landing page actually converted, at which point it can create a cohort for that group of people and target them better, which at the end of the day leads to the same result that you had at the start, which is me targeting exactly the right people, but machine learning doing it.
Right. And you can actually do it in such a way where if you know the salespeople for most sales-led companies have a list of criteria they ask on every first phone call. Is your company big enough? Do you exist in my target geography? What have you? You can put all that information into questions on your form, and the combination of correct answers become that single data point that you share. So you can go a layer further and say, I don't just want people to fill my form out. I only want them to fill it out if they're going to answer questions in this way. And filtering what you're giving to only that specific combination of criteria that isn't targetable, that you're collecting first party people themselves giving you the information, it tends to be significantly more accurate than you have to go by third party list or do any of the things that the people scared of cookies being deprecated or otherwise afraid of.
Right. And from a business perspective, you say that, and I think immediately we don't have any kind of form. We don't have any data collection point that we can send back to Google Ads or another platform, but also that we don't have internally for us. And also we don't necessarily capture the email and the information about the person we're trying to target, which is a huge business mistake. That was a
question. Generally, yeah, you would want to collect something. And the key differentiator here to understand is that you don't have to expose any of that personal information to the platform to get this benefit. That's still private, still yours, exists only in CRM, et cetera. It's really just kind of only firing a one when someone fills out the form, when their email isn't a free email. They meet all of your qualification criteria, et cetera. That's what you're sharing. If you aren't collecting any information and you still have a desire to drive a particular intent of traffic to the site, you can do that with combinations of actions that they take. Did they watch multiple episodes of this show before they reached out? Are they coming from particular referral partners that you value greatly? You can still create those combinations of things, even if it's not personalized information.
Well, you could even suggest that, have they come through multiple channels that make sense to my business, which might be too granular, but basically anything that identifies the exact type of perfect client or perfect prospect that you can send to these platforms is going to make a lot of sense in terms of them then being able to target. And your position here is that they are going to be very, 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 very good if you provide the right data.
Yep. And it's the old philosophy is, hey, let's create really specific creative for really niche groups within our audience. And if we're not able to target those niche groups in the way of actually filtering it, we have to do it in this way to maintain that same level of efficiency. The people that care about this most right now are people who are charged with an increased number of sales or qualified leads or people deep into their sales funnels, but that don't have any extra money simply to buy more stuff. They have to get better quality stuff within the budgets that they already have. And so the eye turns from, let me just get more volume, increase my targeting everywhere, jack up the budgets, to how do I get more of this qualified person that we want? And what's the most efficient way to do that?
Right. Now, what I heard in there somewhere, or I imagined I heard in there somewhere, is if I can create multiple personas with multiple super niche needs or parameters or common denominators and create ad campaigns for each, I'm going to perform significantly better. And that forces me to think about what I'm actually offering to whom and what they're going to react positively to.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's the always true adage of right message, right person, right time. You're still striving to do that. It's just a matter of what inputs are within your control to get that very specific message to that very specific audience.
You're going to call me excessively optimistic and positive and like Tigger in Winnie the Pooh, but
that's fine.
That to me, brilliant, smacks of us being gently bullied, which is what we call it at CaliCube, into actually thinking more about what we're trying to do. And the gentle bully is somewhere along the lines being pushed to do something that is good for us, but we're resistant to initially because we're lazy.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth to that. I think the positives that come out of a change like this is the desired strategy to get more information directly from your prospects, that first party information that they're giving you versus like going out and buying something that may or may not be accurate. I think that relationship that you have to build with that individual to get that information will have significant benefit for marketing teams and companies and people just trying to connect with their audience. I think that's a huge positive out of it. And then finding a way to use that information effectively to get more of what you want is certainly what the marketing and sales organization, half of that, is going to care about most.
And right. Okay. And is my kickoff going to be, I need to bleed money to start with to teach the machines, or can I avoid that?
You can avoid that because you're not going to have to spend any more money than you're spending now, whatever that is. Really, it's just a shift of the attention attention that you're giving. So you're not saying, hey, I need to double my budgets to figure this thing out and then narrow down to what works. Right. You're going, in some cases, quite the opposite. You're narrowing to only what you want and then giving a little bit of time and grace for the platforms in your analysis to move closer to that metric versus all the people who wanted purple flip-flops.
Right. And if I look at just Google Ads, does this mm-hmm. then encourage me to create landing pages that work for both Google Ads and for SEO? Bring the two together, say, that's my persona. That's what they're looking for. This is what I'm trying to do with the conversion. And then feed those pages to the Google Ads platform with the assets that are necessary that are actually probably pulled from the page itself.
Sometimes, not always. A lot of it depends on what the queries are, right? If you have a query that is very buying intent focused, like I just need a reason to swipe my credit card and buy this thing, chances are your SEO page is going to be too broad and too informational for that purpose. You're going to want a more specific page that talks about the reasons you should just swipe your card and buy that thing. If you are bidding on terms that are more educational, that are more someone in the middle or the top of the funnel, if you will, where you have to tell them a little bit more about why they should care, what the problems are, what problems that you solve, that's where you get a little bit of that intersection between that content being the same, potentially being quite useful. But ultimately, you want to match as best you can, whether it's SEO specific or paid media specific, the thing that user, when they click on either the organic or the paid result, what do they expect to be on the other half of that? Matching that expectation as best you can sometimes means it goes to the same page for both sources. Sometimes it means you need a very specific experience for that user in that moment, but the closer you can get to perfection there, the better.
Yeah, right. Which means think about it before you just throw the pages in that. But you said as close to perfection as possible. And mm-hmm. Google and Bing talk about the perfect click. And the perfect mm-hmm. click for them is when the user clicks on the link from the search page in this particular circumstance, gets to the page, and the problem is then solved on that page. So we're all looking for that. And that brings us to mm-hmm. SGE, Search Generative Experience, mm-hmm. and Bing Chat, which is the generative AI of the future. And we're going to come into the ads in a moment. Mm-hmm. Fabrice Canel from Bing talked to me about the idea of Bing Chat and SGE is to bring the user down the funnel on the SERP and get to mm-hmm. the perfect click on the SERP without the user having to bounce backwards and forwards between sites. So the SERP then becomes a search engine results page, then becomes an assistive engine or an answer engine that guides the user down the funnel, perfect click, conversion done. So the clicks are going to be significantly mm-hmm. more valuable. How do they fit ads into that?
That is the million-dollar question. So the betas for SGE that have been available have shown it in a few different formats. They've shown it both as a sponsored headline within the SGE response that has sponsored next to it, and it clearly is about the related information, but it would go to some designated page. And then they've shown it above and below that instance to try to figure out what is best. It is a really interesting conundrum because the SGE experience, at least on Google, is aimed, to your point, to give the user an answer right there or in that moment, or combine many sources together into a single output that gives the user what they want. But that doesn't always align with advertiser intentions. It significantly skews towards educational content, SGE does, versus purchase-oriented content. We have seen a higher density of ads in things like SGE experiences that lean local, like showing different options for local businesses if you're thinking about getting a haircut or something to that effect. They also skew more ad-oriented when the SGE experience skews towards products as well. Like these are literal options of products and services you can buy to solve this problem. But when you consider what you had on your screen earlier, that like people also ask section, the other questions that Google suggests you probably have, those all skew very informational as far as, when you're in grade school and your teacher's like, if you have a question in your head, someone else does too. That's what they're trying to solve there. But that's a really weird place to put an advertisement in many cases.
Yeah. Which might total sense. Now the question with that is if they're looking for the perfect click, does that mean that the cost per click is going to be going up?
I think so. You're going to have less visible inventory for your traditional ad, which means higher bids to get that most clicked on spot, whatever that new number one looks like. I do think it also will come with increased numbers of ad formats. So what we start to see PMax doing, which is taking content and moving it into either video for YouTube, display for GDN, or text for otherwise search. I think you're going to have ad formats that match the experience of that SGE quite well, so that it's just another way to bid. Those may be more inexpensive than what you might call a standard one. But if there ever is an option for an ad that is the entire SGE takeover, I think that would be considerably expensive.
Right. Now, with PMax, I mean, I didn't realize that's what it was called, but actually I have one client that I've been working with historically for 6-7 years. We were doing dynamic search ads, and they forced us to switch to PMax. The first month was hugely expensive, and then it's got significantly better. And they're doing the videos and they're doing the image ads that we didn't do with the DSA, the dynamic search ads. And it seems to be working, which I found quite surprising. And if I'm right, they're creating videos dynamically from the images and text that I give them.
They are. And that's evolving as well. The thing that I encourage people to be careful about when they're analyzing that is, if you are solely looking at a cost per eyeball, number of people seeing the message that you're putting out, and in many cases, the cost per click, those do go down quite significantly, because things like a lot of times video impressions on YouTube and certainly display impressions on GDN are way cheaper than search clicks ever were. So if you're measuring it in that way, it's very easy to see a reduction in cost. If you're measuring it from a lead perspective, a cost per person who came to my website and filled out my form to get in touch with someone, it oftentimes will do the opposite initially. And in some cases, unless you kind of rein it in a little, if you think the reason is search ads, someone has a direct intent, they're looking to solve it because they're going to a search engine, they're seeking an answer. Someone reading a blog post about why I should adopt a Labrador and seeing an ad for a B2B SaaS product, like that is a very, you have to take me out of my experience and convince me to do this thing I'm not really thinking about. Those leads tend to be more expensive. So it's a matter of paying particular attention to that half. Are you getting more leads? Are they of the same, equal, or better quality? If so, wonderful. If not, determine which of the sort of formats and placements that are being automatically produced in PMax are producing the lower quality of what you want, and do your best to filter those out and remove them.
Brilliant. I mean, one thing that I noticed on the one campaign I've done, so obviously I'm speaking from not very much experience, is that the photos were hugely good quality. Mm-hmm. And I suspect that that plays enormously into it, because the visual aspect is something we weren't particularly used to or being used in DSA. And all of a sudden it becomes, I would imagine, incredibly important. And we're lucky or smart to have had great photos.
Yeah, the visual is always there. If you consider just like a standard social ad, the way that it looks, you have a big image, sometimes with text on it, you have the text that's above it, that is more of the post text, and then kind of the ad headline and whatnot, if you will, beneath that. Many, many eye test studies suggest that the eyes go image first, then text within the image, then post copy, then whatever the actual ad says beneath it. So if that first stop is, what is this image and why do I care about it? The quality of that is significantly more important than any other piece of that ad.
Brilliant answer. And what about the CTA? Does the call to action become even more important now?
It becomes important because things are going to continue to get slightly more expensive. So you want a higher rate of action on the more expensive thing to keep costs within. But the goals of the CTA are going to be the same. If we are doing everything that's in our power to make sure that that ad is being placed in front of the right person, it really just has to be the relevant ask we're asking them to take in the part of the journey where they exist. If someone didn't know about your product or service at all, asking them to sign up for a demo is probably a little bit much. Right. But if they are asking oriented questions or they have that kind of search history, then maybe that makes sense.
Right. Okay. Now, another question is, in the description, you've put broad in inverted commas when you say broad targeting. Now, what do you mean by broad with the inverted commas?
I'll give you the example. So in Google search, if we're sticking with that medium, there are three different types of keywords you can target. You can target a broad match keyword. So if we're using our red shoes example, that would automatically change the keyword red shoes to accept queries like purple flip-flops, orange boots, and all variations. They then have phrase, which you would wrap in normal quotes, which would say, okay, I want to bid on the keyword red shoes, but if it's red shoes size 10 or boots that look like red shoes, like as long as that key phrase is in there, you can write whatever you want on either side. And then they have a third, most specific, called exact match, which would only be someone searching for red shoes. They write any other words, the ad doesn't show. That's how it worked for a long time, but things are becoming more broad because that red shoes exact match will now allow for spellings, close variants, other words than synonyms that Google thinks are related. So they're taking what used to be very narrow and making it more broad. So that is the challenge for that specificity problem from earlier. But when you consider leaning into what we would call a broad strategy and using that data point that we talked about all the way at the beginning for a targeting layer, what we're talking about is actually saying, hey, we're not going to target the exact match stuff at all. We're actually going to go significantly broad match for the reasons that our available audience gets much bigger because you're allowing a bunch of different queries and variations in. And because your audience is getting much bigger, your cost to reach that audience, your cost per click or your CPM is going to drop dramatically because it's not as narrow. So you're trying to combine the broadest possible audience to reduce that click and impression cost with a data point that's going to do significant amounts of targeting for you. So you're combining those two efficiencies. I'm getting all the machine learning that I possibly can from this data point. I'm getting the cheapest possible traffic. And those two things paired together with the ability to scale is the best, you know, it's the middle of the Venn diagram. It's the best place to be for that point.
Okay. And another question is, does this mean that ad agencies are going to go out of business because they can set it up and then forget it because the AI will take over?
Selfishly, I'm going to say no, right? I work for one and I'd like to have a job for a long time. But I do think the way that the media buying is will have to change. I think that I've made the comment slash joke that we're headed a little bit back towards the Mad Men days of marketing, where significantly more emphasis is put on creative and messaging and being the reason why someone comes in to choose you than maybe it has been more recently when it's been more sort of like offer and quick hack, if you will. So I think there's going to be added emphasis on creative. I think there's also going to be significantly increased emphasis on the data science piece. How do you know that that event that you're creating is the right one, that those people do have all the leading indicator habits that are going to move them through sales? And you're still going to have someone to manage what the combination of those two things are doing in platform and how it's performing and adding this and removing that. But it won't look the same as it does today. So I think some of the makeup of what ad agencies look like and how they describe their services will change. But I think your shift into that creative and data capability is going to be a significant competitive advantage to those getting to it now versus those that wait.
Brilliant answer. So you won't be out of a job anytime soon, and nor will I, because branded search will stay around forever because it's the key to the future. So my question, last question of the show, as always, how will broad ad targeting and automation affect branded search? 1 minute, Josh.
It's going to change some of what you see when you do that SERP. So I think there's always going to be an organic component that will show what shows up for someone's name, a company name, what have you. But I think the ability to protect that branded search with things like ad targeting, with things like various different formats to put particular media there that we would like there most directly, is really going to be a thing that you can lean into from a brand protection perspective.
Brilliant. I'd like to add one thing that just literally occurred to me, which was if Google managed to make the connection, which it did here, between the person and the topic, theoretically, what it could then do with the very broad targeting that you now allow it with the automation is target keywords for Iron Man when somebody searches Josh Muskin. That would make exactly sense. Right. And it would mean that your branded search is very much more difficult for you to defend once Google has understood who it is you serve and your competitors are going to be much more present. That's my bet for the future. Thank you so much, Josh. It was beautifully, wonderfully delightful. I enjoyed it a great deal. And now we're going to pass the baton to next week's guest, Alicia Barr, Cringe-Free Sales That Convert. We're now working with her at Kelly Cube, and she's going to help me with our sales pitch that doesn't make me cringe and doesn't make our prospects cringe. And I think that's going to be a hugely wonderful, brilliant thing for everybody involved in CaliCube, buying from CaliCube, working with CaliCube. So Alicia's going to be wonderful and explain how you can do that for your company. Could you possibly pass the baton, Josh?
Of course, Alicia, I can't wait to see what you're going to say as someone who's relatively new to a sales part of an organization. I've seen firsthand some of the struggles that can come from outreach and have it feel very cringy. So the tips that you have for outreach, especially if they work both with the individual's capabilities, their personality, as well as the combination of that plus the service or the product that they're selling, really, really excited to see what you have. Here is the baton / pen pass to you.
Brilliant. One of the few people who managed to pass the baton in the right direction in a back-to-front camera. Thank you, everyone, for watching. Thank you, Josh. That was absolutely brilliant. See you next week with Alicia. A quick goodbye to and the show. Thank you, Josh.
Thank you, Jason. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. CaliCube. It's all about your brand, SERP.